Okay, so we'll just wrap up with a few words on network performance. This is essentially what we're doing for the whole module, so it's, again, good to have an idea of where the performance issues are entering into the problem. Okay, so we can look at performance from two perspectives, at least. First is from the network perspective, and networks are concerned with their equipment. It's expensive, they want to use it well. Okay, and then they might not have a great sense of individual users, but globally to the users, they want to offer a certain quality of service. Okay. So what metrics can we have for that? The first is throughput. So at what rate can a packet be transported through the network? Now that's typically an average. Maybe we can get some sort of distribution on that average. It isn't making any guarantees about your one individual packet. Okay. Beyond that, we have efficiency. So what percentage of the network resources are in use at any given time? So again, the network is the more resources are in use, the better. And we can think of this sort of as being a normalized throughput. Okay, so it's packet rate, so packets per second, divided by packet transmission time. Okay, so you can transmit at a certain rate, but because of various protocols, maybe you're not always sending packets, etc. So how many of those are getting through, and then, again, normalize that. Okay. Loss rate, so how many packets are lost or in error. And if we're dealing with circuit switch systems, we probably won't really deal with, or at least not a lot, then the question becomes the blocking probability. Okay, so how many things just won't get through? Okay. So what we see is that depending, again, on how we implement the network, you get sort of different values for that. You get, and then, again, for individual packets, you're getting delay values. The from the application perspective, we have, well, what are their requirements? Okay. And what we saw was, well, some can tolerate loss. Some types of applications can tolerate loss. Some can't. Some can tolerate delay, and some can't. Okay. And again, the ITUT recommendation G1010 surveyed all the types of applications and looked at sort of what their requirements were in terms of these sorts of parameters, and summarized it, classified traffic types based on that sort of classification. Okay, so I just mentioned that for noting, so that you can look at, you can think about again what the how applications, what requirements applications have of the network. Our bottom line is that typically we're worried about delay, loss, and throughput. Okay. Okay. So, as you might guess, again, circuit switched and packet switched networks are going to have different quality of service parameters. Again, for your circuit switch network, you're allocating your resources end to end. So you have sort of a minimal delay in forwarding your packets. You, since the resources are allocated, you don't have to do this store and forward. You don't have to wait. As soon as a bit is received, you can forward it on to the next. So you get a pipe, a bit pipe going. Okay. Not all of the bits are going to arrive correctly. The transmission of medium leads to some loss. And so that will reflect in a bit error rate. Typically, you're allocated a certain set of a certain amount of resources, so that will give you your maximum bit rate. So, things go as smoothly as actually possible, and your delays are minimized using circuit switching. The one component that might change that is that you do need to set up a connection. So again, if you're just sending little tiny bits of data, the overhead for setting up the connection can be high and might not make it worth it. Finally, because you're reserving resources, if the resources aren't available, you don't have the option of just sending things along and, you know, hoping for the best. You're blocked. So if the resources aren't available, then the connection can't be made. You can't send your data at all. Okay. And so this is another thing that's been studied analytically for telephone networks 100 years ago. Okay. So there are a lot more, since we don't have this bit pipe going on, there are a lot more delay factors for the breakout of the sort of minimal delay that you have. Well, you obviously have to transmit a single bit, then it's pipelines. There may be some processing delay at the interface, but we usually ignore that. The bits are pipelined, but it will still take a certain amount of time for the first bit to just physically travel, and everybody else is queued up behind it. And, of course, your connection set up. So capacity is an issue, both in terms of each switch. Again, there's only a certain number of inputs and outputs. And then, again, end-to-end, you've got that being replicated through multiple switches. Okay. Network efficiency is also an issue. If you're tying up resources, you want to make sure it's in a way that so you're using the most resources you can. Okay, so for packet switch networks, there's a lot more opportunity for delays and variability in delays. So first of all, packets are sent, information is transmitted per packet basis. We have store and forward, so packets have to be received and retransmitted. Okay. So this packet transmission time becomes significant, and usually to manage that, we put a cap on how big a packet we're willing to send. From a network perspective, we still have the idea of throughput. This is now in a packet by packet basis. We're not worried about bit errors, but how they impact on again the packets. So the packet error rates, typically they're related to the length of the packet. Okay. We have packet transfer delays, so this includes the processing, the propagation, the transmission times, queuing times, and we have variability on all that. Again, so if you have people coming from all directions, going all directions, then at any individual point in the network, there's no way to completely control the input, and therefore you end up with the queuing and unpredictability around the delays in the network. So that's the sort of thing that we want to start to study in this module. Okay, so again, the packet size is picked to balance error rates. So again, it sees the error is assuming a sort of mean bit error. The packet error is going to be related to the length of the packet, and that has to be balanced against sort of the data you're carrying in the packet relative to the amount of overhead. So all the control, the header information that you're carrying. So you want longer, so overhead's less of a component, but the longer you get, the more likely you are to have an error. Okay. So typically the protocols, individual protocols, have some regulation on this, trying to balance those two factors. Okay, throughput is, again, measured in packets per second. Packet error can either be mentioned, it can either be measured on a link-by-link basis, or, and potentially in that case it's related to the router, or end-to-end, since your packets, again, have to travel over multiple links, typically. Okay. We'll also see that even if the packet's always transmitted correctly across the links, it may not reach its destination. Again, your routing is decided hop by hop, so it could just keep going and going and going and never quite get to the destination. Okay. So, and the transfer delays are measured end to end. And are incorporate sort of all of what goes on, all the waiting that you have to do at the nodes, so store and forward and queuing. Okay. So we usually say there's four sources of delay, some of which we tend to ignore. So there has to be processing at the nodes to check for errors and decide on your output link. Frequently, that's one that we just assume is zero. There's the queuing delay. So this is the time you're waiting to be transmitted based on sort of who's ahead of you at the node. You have transmission delay. So again, at each node, even if there's no one else in the network, if there's only a single packet in the network, it still has to be received and retransmitted at every node. Okay. And so the transmission delay is related to the packet length, and it's the packet length divided by the bit rate. Okay, so you have 20 bits, and at 10 bits per second, it's taking you 2 seconds. And again, we have propagation delays. So this will be related to the distance that the bit needs, or the packet needs to travel. Okay. And so it's the distance divided by your propagation speed. But propagation's fast. It's some fraction of the speed of light, depending on your medium. Okay, and again, it's important to keep the two transmission and propagation delays sort of clear in your head as distinct concepts. They are distinct concepts. I'm trying to think if we'll actually have an example. We may or may not. Okay. So, again, one of the big, or the biggest even, issue for us is going to be this idea of packets queuing at nodes. And this leads to two problems, really. The first is delay. So each packet being transmitted obviously takes a transmission time, possibly different transmission times, leading to the queuing delay, but possibly also there's only a finite amount of space to queue in, okay? So possibly you also have loss if you sort of exceed your space. Okay, so queuing in the system leads to loss as well as just delays. Now, the loss is sort of, it's annoying enough in isolation. So you're dropping packets at a node, but it also becomes more complicated when you view it on a network basis. And again, consider how the various protocols are working. So, if we think of an idealized case, then we have two senders. This is still a single node, but we can look at what happens between the two different senders. And we have two senders, two receivers, one router, an infinite buffer. Okay, so we aren't going to have loss in the system. But as we increase the load on our system, what goes in eventually goes out up to the capacity of the link. Okay, so in this case, each user, if they're dumping in sort of regularly, they're going to get half the link capacity. But as you get close to the capacity of the link, and this is one of the first queuing results we'll see, you're going to, the delay is going to start increasing massively. So you get, if it's great for efficiency, it's something's going through, but your delays are going up a lot. Okay. Now, if we have a more realistic model and the buffer is finite, then we now have loss. And here we start thinking about, well, how does our network deal with loss? Well, typically it's going to ask to have any lost packets retransmitted. Okay. And so what starts happening then is instead of if we think of the lambda prime in being our our new packets going in, well, again, ideally they eventually go out, but if we have loss, then they're not exiting the network. And finally, what you send in is going to be a combination of new packets and retransmitted packets. So again, the amount of new packets exiting the network is again decreasing. Okay. So that's a way in which, again, the protocol is impacting on the performance of the network. So we need it because we need those packets, but it is causing problems. And that's sort of examining what happens within a single node. But the problem then becomes that you get back pressure. So if things are packets being dropped at one node, that means that if that's not the first node the packets traveled through, you've wasted the resources in transmitting the packets sort of partway along the path, and also retransmitted packets are then going to start adding further congestion, not just at the single node, but anything farther back on the path. Okay. So here we have four senders and four receivers. And we have multi-hop paths. So if we look at this blue path and assume that we start experiencing congestion here, well, then you're going to start having packets retransmitted, and that's going to lead to congestion at the nodes sort of back along the path. And that congestion affects not only our blue string, but also our pink string then. And that starts experiencing loss and retransmitting packets that, again, pushes back along the pink path, and you start experiencing congestion there. And so the congestion sort of tends to spread from a single node to multiple nodes. Okay. Again, that's our queuing delay. Again, we'll look at queuing
but that's on the way as we go through the group module.
Okay, so we already had a definition of throughput. This can either be in bits per time unit or packets per time unit, and essentially refers to the rate crossing either end-to-end through the network or certain points of the network. And again, typically, since you have multiple links, then your throughput is defined then by a bottleneck. So whatever your smallest rate link is defines the end-to-end throughput along a given path. And again, efficiency is some throughput divided by transmission speed. Okay. So again, we'll be returning rather frequently to these ideas of delay and throughputs applied to specific protocols or the network as a whole. I just threw in this one last section as food for thought, and again, we may have time to analyze some of the protocols attached and later in the network, later in the module, we'll have to see. But the question here is, so we have our internet running TCP/IP, which is essentially an implementation of this packet switch network, isn't really providing us with much quality of service guarantee. So the question becomes, could we possibly do to improve or support quality of service within this internet paradigm? Okay, and the answer is, you could try to differentiate between traffic types. So say, if I know I have a streaming video, then put it to the front of the queue over file transfer. We know nobody really cares about whether it takes 2 seconds or 4 seconds for a file to be transferred, but they do really care about their video having a good quality. Okay. And so, again, the DiffServ architecture was sort of the proposal to do that sort of thing. The problem with that is, well, it might favor certain traffic classes, but it still can't offer guarantees. And so InServ was a proposal again to what would you have to do to offer quality of service guarantees. Again, it's theoretically interesting. It's not wholly implemented, although components are used in practice. Okay, so now we're going to have to identify what our packets are actually doing. So that's the change. Before, we didn't really care, but we want to say this is a streaming video and this one's file transfer. Okay, so we have to define a number of classes of different types of traffic. So video streaming would be a different class from from data transfer. And within classes, we usually assume that all traffic within a class will be treated the same. So one streaming video is going to be treated like another streaming video. But we will distinguish between traffic of different classes, so streaming video will be treated differently than file transfer or whatever. Okay. And within the classes, we have individual data streams. Okay, so we call those traffic flows. And if we want to offer guarantees, then we're going to actually have to label the traffic flow and treat it, rewind for the moment. We'll have our traffic flows and we'll label them according to class and treat them according to class. Okay. So, and there's a lot of arguments, but the internet actually is working pretty well as it is, and you can always, at least in terms of the core, keep throwing resources at it. Okay. The crunch point tends to be streaming videos, at least at the moment. And so there are a lot of strategies at the application layer, so not involving the network itself, to try and improve the service. So you can cache, you can move things, you move data, you can move the data closer to the user. The players will perform buffering and do what they can. So, arguably, it's actually not that broken, which is probably why not a lot gets done. Okay. So, if we do think about traffic classes, arguably, it wouldn't be terribly hard to distinguish between different classes, a few different traffic classes, and serve them differently, and we'll see sort of the mechanisms that can be used to facilitate that. But essentially, you have new labels, and basically new queuing policies within the routers that will, again, prioritize traffic classes that need priority. Okay. Finally, as we say, that doesn't really offer any quality of service guarantees. So the final question is, what can we do to offer quality of service guarantees? Again, within the context of our internet. And what we'll see is that's hard. It's breaking sort of the fundamental principles of how the internet runs. Specifically, the only way you can offer a guarantee is to reserve bandwidth or have some idea of how much is entering the network and hence exiting. Okay. And so that's going to require some sort of mechanism for making end-to-end reservations, and that's complex and, again, goes against the stateless principle that of the current internet. Okay. So, returning to maybe just looking at traffic classes, what are the issues? Okay, and so we have an example here. We have 1.5 megabit per second link, which is being shared by FTP, so file transfer, and a voice call. Okay. So
we want to prioritize the voice call over the FTP
application. So the first thing, obviously, is we need to be able to distinguish between packets coming from the two different applications. And then the router needs to, in some way, treat the different classes differently. And so the next question is, what happens if applications misbehave? So for instance, the voice could send at a higher rate than it had advertised. And so to deal with this, we're going to have some sort of policing for our applications. Okay. So if we have a traffic class, like a voice traffic class, we have to make sure that what people are sending in and marking as voice is behaving like voice. Okay, not going at twice the rate. Okay. So this is our second principle, that we want to provide protection of the classes, one from the other. This is done, again, by policing the different classes. Okay. So now we get into sort of the idea of using the network efficiently. So one way of allocating resources would be to have dedicated subchannels for each of the different classes. So you could give a megabit per second to voice and half a megabit per second to data. But then the question is, well, what if we're not making a voice call? It would be inefficient not to use the 1 megabit per second bandwidth for our data transmission. Okay, so that's the third principle, is that while we want to protect the classes from each other, so if there are users of a given class, we also want to use our resources as efficiently as possible. Okay. So it's not terribly difficult to, at least again, abstractly, to deal with these three principles. Again, we need to be able to identify the packets and schedule transmission based on that identification. And, you know, we can use some fairly basic scheduling policies to do that. And again, we have to make sure that everybody behaves as they ought to. So, as we said, this isn't enough for guarantees, but it is enough to favor certain classes. Okay. So assuming that we've identified our packets, the question becomes, how do we think about favoring one class over another? And so the first thing we should do is think about, well, what exactly are we doing when we say we've queued and we've buffered our packets? Well, typically, at the node, there's going to be a first-in, first-out scheduling policy. So the packets are transmitted out in the order that they arrive. Okay. Now, combined with scheduling, you typically have some sort of discard policy to decide
what packets get dropped, if your buffer is full or getting full. So you either drop the last one to arrive, you can prioritize your packets and drop the ones that you don't think are as important, or just randomly. Sometimes it might even be advantageous to randomly drop packets.
Okay. So obviously that does no favoring of any class of traffic. So our next possibility would be to prioritize one traffic class over another. And so then you can think of it as setting up a few queues. Depending on your priority, you go into one or the other queue. And the high priority queue is always cleared, and then the low priority clear is served whenever you clear the high priority. And so that certainly favors one class over another. The drawback of this sort of a scheduling policy is that you can freeze out lower priority traffic altogether. And so while you want to favor your higher priority traffic, you don't want it to completely take over. So what can you do about that?
So what we're looking at there is a question of fairness. Okay, so it's not fair to have one stream or one class frozen out. So the opposite extreme from prioritization is round robin scheduling, and here you do turn taking. So you serve one class, then the next, back to the first class.
And so this is sort of the ultimate in terms of fairness. Everybody gets exactly the same shot at being served.
The problem with that, obviously, is that you're not prioritizing anything at all. Everybody's being treated equally. But we can combine the multiple ideas into what's called weighted fair queuing, where you distinguish between classes. Each class has a turn at service, but your higher priority classes get longer turns. Okay, so in that way, you're giving more bandwidth to your higher priority classes, but you're not allowing them to completely freeze out lower priority classes. Okay. Okay, so these sorts of ideas actually have found their way into routers, so
there is some favoring and prioritizing of traffic classes within routers. Now, the second component that we talked about was policing.
And so we want to make sure that our traffic classes are behaving as they should. They're not blasting in data.
We want to make sure that our traffic is essentially conforming to rate definitions or restrictions.
And so we typically three different factors can be measured and used.
And so you look at your long-term average rate, so how many packets can be sent per unit time in the long run. And again, it's important how you define your intervals. So sending 100 packets per second or 6,000 packets per minute has the same average, but can have much different distributions. Okay. So in addition, we might want to define a peak rate, so that we're not blasting through too quickly, and a burst size, so that again, you have the maximum amount of data you can send it with no intervening idle period. Okay. And so, again, there are mechanisms for dealing with this sort of policing. The main one is what's called a token bucket. And the token bucket works by only allowing packet transmission if there's a token available, or marking packets according to the tokens available. Possibly you might send packets anyway, but just marked as not conforming, so they'll be transmitted if possible, but they don't have to be. Okay. So the way the token bucket works is that it has a capacity to hold a number of tokens, B tokens, and so whenever a packet wants to be transmitted, it takes a token out of the bucket if it's there. And the tokens are refilled at a fixed rate. Okay. And so what that means is, again, the long-term average rate at which you can send packets is the token rate, and the burst size is the size of the bucket. It's a little more complicated to find maximum rates, but you can do it with a couple of buckets. Okay. So, again, by combining these mechanisms, you can relatively easily find a system that favors traffic classes and behaves itself so that it conforms to our principles. Now, the weighted pair of queuing, if our rates are policed, then weighted pair of queuing will mean that there's an upper bound on the delay which any packet will experience. Okay. Now, looking at it in terms of the edge and the core, again, we've got the idea that the users are at the edge, and the sort of the complicated stuff, the marking and policing of packets is done there at the edge, so as the packets enter the network. Okay. Again, we can either block pack non-conforming packets, or we can send them in, but mark as non-conforming so that they can be the ones to be first dropped. Okay. So that's sort of the complicated work to be done. At the core, we have our marked packets, and our scheduling is just going to be based on the packet markings. Okay, so again, as long as you label your packets, then the scheduling is done according to those labels. So that's a fairly small change from the current. Just look at the address. Okay. Now all you're doing is rearranging the queue service policy. Okay. So that works fine as long as you're not overloading the network. But you can never support traffic demands beyond the capacity of the network. If you're sending more in than you have the capacity to send out, then you're in trouble. Okay. So in order to offer any sort of proper guarantee, then you're going to need to block traffic going into the network if, again, it's exceeding the capacity. Okay. And so you'll have to have a flow, traffic flow, which declares its needs and checks, and then the network has to check whether those needs can be met. Okay. So, again, in order to do that, you're going to have to do some sort of resource reservation. It can still be done within the remit of statistical multiplexing. You don't have to reserve the links, but you have to note how many resources are going to be needed through a certain link at a certain time. Okay. And if the requirements of the traffic flow can't be met, then you're going to have to block that traffic from entering the internet. Okay. So the problem, you know, the awkwardness, that's all possible. The awkwardness is that it's sort of not really at all supported by the current network regime. So right now, again, we have our connectionless, our stateless forwarding of IP by the routers and the best effort service. And what that means is that we don't really have any signaling protocols to reserve resources or set up the connections within the network. Okay, so that would require a fair amount of new work to do that, and again would be essentially getting rid of the connectionless quality of the internet. Okay. So for that reason, and also sort of more practical reasons of who owns, usually the packets are traveling through multiple vendors or multiple entities, networks, and trying to negotiate guarantees from one network to the next would be difficult. This really is not implemented, but people have thought about it. Okay. So, what have we sort of seen here? Well, the underlying network architecture and protocols impact on how well quality of service can be delivered. And so it's different from for circuit switch networks and packet switch networks. And if we had something like InServe or DiffServe, it would be different again. The internet using sort of the TCP/IP protocol stack dominates, and so the protocols within that and the way those protocols are implemented are what are going to dominate our performance concerns. There have been proposals, again, for modifying the internet, so for changing the way TCP/IP works to cater for various quality of service concerns. And DiffServe can be done fairly easily within the framework of TCP/IP. InServe, not so much. Okay, so what we saw with the packet switching was that we hit this queuing, and we had no real way of predicting how much traffic there was going to be in any individual component of the network at any given time. And so what we're going to have to do is look at ways of modeling that uncertainty. Okay. So we're going to view our traffic patterns as stochastic variables. So variables with a time and space, time and other component distributions. Typically, we're looking at our nodes and links as queues, and then networks are interconnections of queues. Okay. So what we'll see is that if we make enough assumptions, we can address some questions analytically. And if we relax those assumptions, then the analysis becomes hard or impossible. But we can still build simulation models. So, again, so if you look at models like NS3, they'll have very complex models of various protocols and components of protocols at a degree that would not be where you couldn't analytically address the behavior. But we want to see again what are the underlying principles then of simulation, and the flip side of simulation is that you can't capture all possible behavior, so you have to essentially look at samples of behavior and then generalize out from the samples of behavior. Okay, so as we go through, we're going to look at sort of those aspects and compare between the two approaches. Before we do that, again, we'll have a 2 or 3 lecture review of what some of these protocols, tossing out the word protocol without actually giving you any examples. So we'll have a look at what the protocols are and essentially march through layer by layer to see what the various protocols do and where they cause problems. So we'll do that for a couple of weeks, then we'll get on to the simulation and analysis. Okay, so that's it. Have a good weekend, and I'll see you next week.